The Guardian.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
So, the shortlist for the Man Booker Prize 2012 is out. There are six names on the list, and here's one of them who will be familiar to many of you.
50-odd years ago, in Glossop, Derbyshire, I made up my mind that when I grew up, I would be a knight of the round table. I was very keen on learning to joust, very keen on justice, on glory, on avenging the weak. Think of it stayed with me, and I suppose it was inevitable that in the course of time I'd write a book about Camelot. Because, you know, that's what Henry's court is. You have originally the beautiful, the noble, the athletic young king, the wonderful gentlemen who are both soldiers and heroes, and they're also poets. And you have the beautiful, unobtainable, pure women. But, you know, by the time I've got to the 1530s, the bold and beautiful young men, the knights, are looking a bit shabby. Middle age has caught up with them. They're beginning to limp a bit and go grey and get a bit cynical and world weary. And the women have proved to be all too attainable very often. And yet, this is not to traduce or betray the Camelot legend, because one of the things I understood very early in life is that the stories of King Arthur contain the seeds of betrayal and death and disaster. It's not a perversion of the stories, it's part of the stories. And so it was with Henry's life.
Yes, it's none other than Hilary Mantel. Galloping into the joust with her is Will Self, who is second favourite with the bookies this morning. But alongside them are four less well-known writers. With me to discuss the lineup are Alison Flood, who has already written two stories about it today, starting this morning with the bookies tips, and Mark Brown, hot foot from the announcement. Mark, tell us first, what was the mood like in the room?
Well, I suppose it was quite subdued in many ways, and it was quite a straightforward press conference. There was a lot of interest in the presence of Dan Stevens.
Who's Dan Stevens?
Very handsome Downton Abbey.
Exactly, the actor Downton Abbey, for goodness sake. And I was in the reception when he went, and the receptionist was so excited. She rang up and said, I've just sent Dan Stevens up.
So it's all about the books then.
Yeah, exactly.
And this was a breakfast announcement with coffee and croissants, not much champagne to be seen then.
No champagne, there was coffee and extraordinarily nice biscuits. You know, the announcement was late, and then it was delivered by Peter Stoddart, who delivered it in quite a straightforward way. Quite often the judges talk about different books. They didn't this year. It was Peter Stoddart explaining why they chose the six books they did.
Alison, just for the record, will you just run us through the shortlisted six, please?
Sure. So there's Narcopolis by Jeet Thayil, Swimming Home by Deborah Levy, Bring Up the Bodies by Hilary Mantel, The Lighthouse by Alison Moore, Umbrella by Will Self, and The Garden of Evening Mists by Tan Tuan Eng.
So let's start with Mantel and Self. No surprises there, Alison.
No, the bookies this morning, both Ladbrokes and William Hill, were both making them their favourites to go forward to the shortlist.
But they weren't expressing great excitement should those two favourites get through to the shortlist. This is something that always fascinates me about bookies.
Yeah, I think that Will Self, they've taken a lot of money on Will Self, so William Hill was saying that if he did win it wouldn't be great news for them. I find it hard to believe, really, that not only hasn't Will Self won the Booker, but he hasn't even been shortlisted for it in the past.
It sounds as if Will Self has, that more money's been put on Will Self than on Hilary Mantel. Mark, why should that be?
I don't know. I guess it would be surprising, wouldn't it, if Mantel won for a follow-up. You know, she'd become the first British writer to win twice or win more than once.
No, that's right, because it's Coetzee and Carey
Peter Carey
have both been two-time winners.
Now, there's an even more interesting question. It's, has a sequel ever won a major prize?
No.
And the answer is, actually, you're
is
wrong.
Really?
You're wrong,
what?
Mark. We tweeted it today, didn't we, Alison? And actually, we came up with three.
So the Amber Spyglass won the Whitbread Prize, and that's the third in Philip Pullman's Northern Lights trilogy. Patrick Ness won the Carnegie for Monsters of Men, which is also the third in a trilogy.
The third one, which is a little bit of a plug for us, which is Philip Reed's A Darkling Plain, won the Children's Book Prize, the Guardian's own Children's Book Prize in 2006, and that was the fourth part and final part
of
his Mortal Engines Quartet.
Michelle Paver won the Guardian Children's Fiction Prize as well, with the last one in the Wolf Brother.
Exactly. So interesting that this is something that happens with children's books, but obviously this isn't a children's prize.
Yeah, but Mantel's got a good chance. I mean, the judges went out of their way this morning to compare it to Wolf Hall and say that they thought she'd mastered her method even more in this book, that it was a better book than Wolf Hall.
Mm-hmm. And is it something that you could read without having read Wolf Hall, do you think?
Oh, I think so. I think so. But then, who hasn't read Wolf Hall? We've all read it now, haven't they? Everybody's read it now, haven't they?
And just for anybody who hasn't, those few mortals who haven't, it takes us through the death of Anne Boleyn, takes us Henry's infatuation with Jane Seymour, and ends at a period when we think Thomas Cromwell is sitting pretty, but actually what we history books tell us is he's only 4 years from his death and there is another book to come. So maybe that will be her third book a win. But that's jumping the gun a bit. Let's move on now to Will Self's Umbrella, which is in a way the most uncompromising title, isn't it, Alison?
Yes, I think it's 397 pages long, one paragraph of 397 pages and 120,000 words, said Mark Lawson in his review for us. It's a kind of stream of conscious modernist novel and hard work, but very rewarding, according to all the reviews.
There was a lot of talk at Edinburgh about how Will Self had finally found his heart with this novel, which I took exception to because I'm a great fan of some of his early work, particularly his short stories, but also the novel How the Dead Live, which I thought was an incredibly heartfelt account of a relationship between a mother and daughter. So, I mean, do you feel that that's how he's regarded now, as this sort of heartless wordsmith?
I think he's seen as someone that is possibly hard going, but as I said, I think that everyone's saying that this might be hard work, but once you get into it, it's an incredible read, really amazing. And the story is so fascinating too. It's about the sleeping sickness which swept Britain after the First World War, and this kind of put people into a coma, and it's about a psychiatrist who tried this revolutionary treatment of giving them a drug that I think was used for Parkinson's and brought them out of their coma. So it focuses on one woman called Audrey and her sort of moves between the time zones of just after the First World War to her waking up in the London mental hospital in 1971 to the psychiatrist as an old man in 2010. And it flips between their different perspectives, sort of sliding from one to the other in a fade-out fashion. I wonder if the modernist, difficult nature of this novel is a response in the way from the judging panel to the criticism of last year's one for being all about readability rather than quality.
Yeah, there is definitely a bit of a modernist moment going on now, isn't there? I mean, just to think of two I've read recently, Mark Haddon's new novel and Zadie Smith's N.W. are both quite modernist.
And would you count the yips in that?
The yips, I suppose, yes.
Which got left off.
Which has been left off. Now, let's move to some of the less well-known contenders. And two of them come from small publishers. And I was really delighted to see Salt on there, who got struck off by the Arts Council last year, rather controversially, didn't they, Alison?
Yeah, they lost their Arts Council funding last year. And they've been kind of, it feels like they've been on the edge for a while. They had a campaign where they got their fans to buy just one book from Salt to keep them going. But they consistently bring out great poetry and great fiction, so it's really fantastic for them to get this boost, I think.
And they're on with Alison Moore's The Lighthouse, which is one of two first novels that have made the shortlist. So tell us about that.
It's about a man who sets out for a walking holiday along the Rhine. He's middle-aged and separated, and as he goes, he reflects on trips he took as a child when his own mother, who has the same name as the guy's wife, Angela, left him. It's another short novel. Our reviewer called it slim and spare, and I think it's got an interesting kind of circular structure, which is something the judges said they were looking for, something they wanted a book to be something that you could return to again and again. I don't know if they said anything about that today, Mark.
Yeah, they did. You know, if you mentioned readability last year, I mean, this year it's all about rereadability. You know, they kept on saying that they wanted to choose books that people in 20 years would look back on and that people would reread, and they kept on talking. They used the phrase shock of language and the renewal of English. Quite sort of lofty aspirations by the sounds of it and what they were looking for.
Let's move on now to And Other Stories, which I also feel very, very pleased about, since we were among the people who discovered it. Well, in fact, our readers discovered it by voting their very first novel, Down the Rabbit Hole, onto the first book prize, the Guardian First Book Prize, last year.
So they're a really interesting publisher as well. These publishers, Myrmidon as well, which published Tan Tuan Eng, they're literally, I don't know, a handful of people running them. And these guys are up against Random Houses and Hachettes of the World, which is staffs of hundreds. But And Other Stories, it's a not-for-profit company, and it works with reader subscriptions. So before the novels are published, readers have subscribed to getting what And Other Stories are publishing throughout the year.
But Deborah Levy, who's Swimming Home is their title, she's been around for years, hasn't she? I mean, she's a playwright and novelist. Why has she ended up with a tiny little publisher like this?
I guess it's because she hasn't published anything for 15 years, so her name has sort of fallen by the wayside a bit, and none of the big ones would take her on.
Yeah, I think it wasn't for the want of trying. I think she was turned down by the big publishers, as was Tan Tuan Eng, of course, who's with Myrmidon, as you said, who are this first Newcastle publisher to be...
Close to your heart, then.
Absolutely, yeah. But, I mean, I think they're very much aiming to follow the Canongate model and the success of Canongate in Edinburgh. And I think Tan was one of their first novelists when he signed for them about 5-6 years ago.
And tell us then a little bit more about The Garden of Evening Mists. That's the Tan Tuan Eng.
It's a sweeping sort of epic book, really. It's set in the Japanese occupation of Malaya during the Second World War, and also the Malaya Emergency and more recent times. And it's a story of love and guilt. Beautifully written story with lots of surprises.
And he was long-listed before, wasn't he, for The Gift of Rain? And I remember reading that and being really impressed by his ability to capture a moment of history that seemed really important, that sort of the end of the Eastern Empire.
Yes, absolutely. And in this second book, he's telling the story of Malaysia in a lot of ways. There's a lot of history in there.
And a lot of very detailed evocation of things like tea ceremonies and gardening, isn't there?
And archery.
I mean, you like
honestly,
that sort of stuff.
Yes, there's so much gardening in there. I mean, you could make your own Japanese garden after reading this book. There's so much in there. But also archery and tattoos and tea ceremonies.
Yeah. Alison, it sounds absolutely, just to go back to the to Swimming Home, absolutely the opposite to Swimming Home, which sounds like almost like a Hampstead novel transported to the south of France.
Yeah, well, in a way, it has got the familiar elements of the middle-class holiday, two families sharing a villa and a stranger arrives. But I think it's a lot more than that as well. This woman turns up on the holiday of this poet and his wife, a war reporter. They're on holiday in the south of France. She's besotted with his poetry. His wife asks her to stay for reasons of her own, and this woman starts wandering naked around the villa and things slowly start to fall apart. Our reviewer said that it was intimate in detail. It's another slim novel, but it's great.
Okay, so now on to the final one on the shortlist, which is Narcopolis by Jeet Thayil. We know about him. We have actually had Jeet Thayil on this very podcast, and very impressed we were with him too. It's another quite sweeping historical novel, which is set in Mumbai, or Bombay, as he calls it. And it deals basically with the changing drug culture. And Jeet has a really interesting personal story that he says he was himself an alcoholic and wasted a lot of years to it. And you just feel there's an awful lot of hearts gone into this story. But it's very exotic in quite a Lawrence Durrell way. You have the central character runs an opium parlour, and you could say it's actually a love affair between this character and a eunuch. but it's very innocent, even though it's decadent at the same time.
Mm. Well, it kind of puts the lie to Irvin Welsh saying that the Booker is all about English middle class stories.
Now, Mark, the ones that have gone out, do we have any regrets?
I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be anybody really jumping up and down saying why on earth wasn't this shortlisted. I mean, the Michael Frayn novel Skios was fantastic and fantastically funny. But, you know, in the light of day, cold light of day. Was it as good as these other six? Maybe not.
So you don't think there'll be scandals like last year when Alan Hollinghurst didn't make it through?
Which was an absolute disgrace, of course, when you know, The Stranger's Child didn't get on the shortlist, and it was clearly the best book of the year, and lots of people said, what a disgrace. I don't think there'll be anything like that this year, no.
So there isn't a feeling that there is, even before the longlisting stage, that there's some great novel that has just completely failed to be spotted this year?
I don't think so.
So there's no book of scandal. This is awful. I have to make one up.
Peter Stoddart, you're going to have to get your socks on, because actually, don't you know, it's expected of you to manufacture a scandal. But I'm afraid you're going to have to wait to find out what that is, because that's it for this year's Booker Shortlist podcast. From me, Claire Armistead, Alison Flood, Mark Brown, and our producer, Tim Mabey. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.